This is the Taylor Report. It is CIT 9.5 FM. We're going to be speaking soon with Tiphaine Dixon. She was a lawyer at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And we assumed that she is very interested in the Globe and Mail front page story, which reads, Rwanda Genocide is the subhead, and the full head is Kagame Government Blocked. UN Tribunal Probe, Arbour says. And it's written by Michelle Zilio of Ottawa and Jeffrey York, and based in Johannesburg. And it has this revelation that our former Supreme Court Justice is acknowledging a glitch. And we need to explore that with Tiphaine Dixon, who had practiced law there at the International Criminal Tribunal, knows a thing or two about this matter and probably some things about Louise Arbour. I think she has joined us. Are you there, Tiphaine?
Yeah, hi, Phil.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
We're very glad that you could talk to us. I was just telling our listeners that the headline on the Globe and Mail story is Kagame Government Blocked, UN Tribunal Probe. And this is, and the first paragraph says, a United Nations criminal tribunal was so hobbled by the hostility of the Rwandan government that it was unable to investigate, quote, very credible allegations of crimes by the forces of Paul Kagame. President Paul Kagame says Louise Arbour, the tribunal's former chief prosecutor. And they also indicate further on in the story that there was credible, the line that taken from her is that credible evidence that Paul Kagame had been involved in the assassination of President Habyarimana of Rwanda and Cyprien Ntaryamira, I think his name is, and of course all the others on the plane, April 6, 1994. This is, of course, 2016. You were in court in 1997 defending Mr. George Rutaganda. I think we need to hear from you what you make of this, just starting with this point. Arbour, this is many years later, she is telling us something rather important. What's your assessment of this?
Well, first I want to say that the prosecution being hobbled by the Rwandan government is certainly not breaking news, and I'm pretty sure that you have reported on this on your show for maybe 20 years.
For a little while, we've even spoken to a man named Hurigan who shows up in this story.
Yes,
more than once.
Yes,
the Globe and
yes.
Mail wasn't able to find him at that time, but we noticed that he had a phone number and an address and a legal practice, so we called him up.
Yeah, and thank you so much for doing that. Thank you so much for getting him on the record before he sadly passed away. Mm-hmm. So the way it's framed by Louise Arbour is a little bit disingenuous. One gets a sense in reading the story that really. She and I guess the office of the prosecutor. I mean, in the choice of the verbs, right? They were hobbled. Mm-hmm. They're the real victims here, and certainly from my perspective, having been a defense lawyer at the ICTR, it's very difficult to have a tremendous amount of compassion and sympathy for the prosecutor's office that I will argue. Let themselves be manipulated by the Kagame government, and meekly followed their orders throughout, resulting in a number of cruel injustices.
Mm-hmm. And of course you raised the word victim. I know you won't like the label, but you were trying to defend your client, and you asked that United Nations prosecutor at the Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda for disclosure This story bears on what happened with that experience. It seems we've asked you about this previous, but it seems more poignant now. As a matter of fact, that's why we wanted to call you back so soon. We've spoken to you a couple of weeks ago over other revelations that are coming out about suspicions of Kagame's involvement in the assassination, which is so central. Yeah. And you were very helpful to us then. But at that time, you did not have in your hands Arbour saying, yes, she was quite aware of this phenomenon. Although she didn't volunteer to talk about Mr. Hourigan. Apparently, the Globe raised it with her. But what about your right to your client's right to a fair trial and due process and a big word with lawyers, disclosure? Talk about what happened to you and the prosecution.
So I first want to say that it's not just me, and I'm looking at the transcript from the February 7th, 1997. Almost 20 years old, and I even argue that it's not just about Rutaganda, but all the accused, mm-hmm. and indeed for history, that the prosecution disclose the results of investigations into the shooting down of President Habyarimana's plane,
mm-hmm.
And it was materially relevant in the case of Rutaganda. I mean, I'll get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to me at the time not to be such a controversial request. Mm-hmm. I had even tried to hedge by stating or by petitioning that if they did not have an investigation into the shooting down of the plane, that the court direct the prosecutor's office to investigate the shooting down of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened in the courtroom that morning was rather astonishing. On his oath of office, the representative of the prosecutor then responds that they don't have investigations into the shooting down of the plane. And I quote, our responsibility and mandate is not to investigate plane crashes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really our function. Therefore, I would categorically answer this question by saying that first, we don't have such investigation. We have not made any such investigation, and we don't have any reports. And secondly, it is not our function, it is not our mandate to investigate plane crashes or presidents, vice presidents, or whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this is really a matter not within our province.
Mm-hmm. That's what he said. And meanwhile, an investigation had gone on and was going on, right? And incidentally, I get the implication from the story that there was even a second investigation, not only the one we could call the Hourigan investigation.
Correct.
But something else,
right?
Further.
Yeah, what that would seem to be was an investigation that former prosecutor Carla Del Ponte had requested to her special investigations team, and this is referred to in the previous Globe story as a report bearing the classification top secret from
mm-hmm.
2003 and setting out evidence with respect to offenses committed by the RPF, the current Rwandan regime, and including a reference to investigations on the shooting down of the plane and an implication that that the RPF was to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And so my understanding is that after Carla Del Ponte was removed from her position as prosecutor of the ICTR...
Guilty of carrying out her duties.
Well, yeah, guilty of carrying out her duties and guilty in particular of not having caved to the pressure brought upon her in Washington by the U.S. Ambassador for War Crimes Issues, who had been a previously prosecutor at the ICTR, who had her there in Washington in some State Department office with the Rwandan delegation. Asking her to agree, asking her to literally sign on to a document stating that she would not undertake investigations against the RPF.
By the way, just to add a little melodrama, the way theater people would, that gentleman was in the courtroom when the as a deputy prosecutor when the first the one address, answering your questions denied they had any that they investigated plane crashes.
That's correct.
He was sitting alongside.
He was sitting alongside.
He gets around.
Yeah, and the transcripts show that he's a little cannier than his colleagues. He does not say that there are no investigations because we know that there was an investigation. We learned that in 2000 when the revelations of Mr. Hourigan were published in the National Post.
Mm-hmm.
So Prosper, I guess being perhaps a more clever attorney than his colleague. Refers only to the lack of relevance of disclosure of elements regarding the shooting down of President Javier Jimenez's plane to my client's case.
Mm-hmm. Well, this bears on. It was so important that this came up, and you're right. It was really impacted all cases because the people around the world who were aware of the horror of the story, the assassination and then the war and then all the massacres, when they heard there was going to be a tribunal, there was, it seems to me, some sleight of hand practiced because Mr. Goldstone, who was the original chief prosecutor, indicated that he was going to look into the plane crash. That was going to be part of the mandate.
Yes.
And then he goes out of the door and Luis Arbour comes in. And then we don't hear about that investigation anymore. Yet the implication hung over all trials that the evil, et cetera, extremist Hutus had done had assassinated Habimana. That was a prosecution theory, but they didn't prosecute that crime. And so the cloud was over throughout the trials, and to this day, frankly, I mean, I don't know how many people in the world have heard what Ms. Arbour has to say. But there was a kind of sneak, unstated case or unproven case which people were permitted to believe that it was Hutus who had done it or the extremists, when in fact there was no evidence.
That's absolutely correct, and in fact, if they incrementally stopped loudly claiming that the Hutu extremists had shot down the plane because President Javier Mena was becoming too soft or making too many concessions in the context of the Arusha Accords, it is, I think, due in large part to their reluctance to talk about their own investigations into the shooting down of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
They began to quiet down in terms of that theory and that led us led folks to be suspicious about what the results of that investigation might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they reluctant to communicate these results, and why are they B, no longer insisting on this prosecution theory, and instead changing tack and saying that the assassination of President Javier Jimenez is irrelevant, that the genocide was pre-planned anyway. This is a spark, but it's an accidental spark.
Yes, but then at the end of the day, when the trial closed up, they hadn't proven that there was any pre-planning. So
right.
So then you can. You know, take your ticket and go into the wilderness because now it's all a ghost town, and the court that you imagined was there has disappeared, and all these men are and one woman are sitting in prison, or in a kind of a limbo, despite the revelations that you and I are talking about. We're speaking to Tiffan Dixon. She was the lead counsel in the case of Rutaganda George, to say it properly. Was the lawyer who challenged, demanded of the prosecution that he disclose what he knew about the any investigations of the shooting down. And we may as well share with our listeners, the prosecution never used the word shooting down. They actually used language which would permit you to think that the plane had fallen from the sky all by its lonesome.
Yes. So
You on your side would mention it occasionally, or when you got the opportunity, that missiles struck that plane, two of them. Whereas the prosecutor could not say that.
No.
It would not come out of his mouth.
They would only refer to crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I read then, February 1997, we don't investigate plane crashes, presidents, vice presidents, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
This was a practice that extended right to my client's judgment.
Mm-hmm.
In the court's judgment finding George Rutaganda guilty, the reference is not to a shootdown, but to a crash.
A plane crash.
Failing entirely to acknowledge the fact that, okay, the plane did crash. Before it crashed, it was attempting to land at Kigali Airport and was hit by two SAM-16 missiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's not honest to refer to that as a
yes.
crash.
Yes. By the way, why wouldn't if they weren't somewhat playing a guilty hand, why wouldn't they enthusiastically join with you in just using those words if there wasn't something a little odd about their case?
Yeah, it just shows that the prosecution was most likely that day when I presented that motion,
mm-hmm.
Lied under his oath of office.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have evidence to show that Hutu extremists shot down that plane, then of course you're going to call it a shoot down.
Mm-hmm. And you bring your evidence.
Get
it over with.
If you have evidence that's not suiting your larger thesis of pre-planned genocide, or this is germane to the Globe story, or if your evidence suggests that perhaps Paul Kagame himself was involved in the shooting down of the plane, and that you have put yourself in a position where you're totally reliant on the Rwandan government from anything from visas to witnesses,
mm-hmm.
and cooperation generally. Well, then then they're not going to disclose that evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Louise Arbour said it herself. We didn't have the capacity.
Uh-huh. Well, by the way, and the obvious question is, should they? She, in her facing her duties as a member of the bar, et cetera, and a former justice of the Canadian mm-hmm. court, shouldn't you say, I can't do my work, we're going to have to shut this down? Or a second question, too, is that if the government of Paul Kagame threatens you and says you can't do this and you can't do that, can't you charge him with contempt? Isn't that the appropriate thing to do?
I mean, that is the ideal type legalist view.
Oh, that's me.
And what she's saying in this article, and what we've been observing for two decades now, is that that's not realistic. So, I mean, there was an interesting twist.
Not realistic. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the Rwandan government has suspended cooperation on several occasions. They've shown that they're absolutely prepared to put a chokehold on prosecution witnesses coming to Arusha.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor was not prepared to face those kinds of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an interesting twist on this by Del Ponte, when she was asked to sign this document stating that she wouldn't prosecute RPF crimes out in Washington. So apparently she had offered another way to do this. She said, have the Security Council modify the statute of the tribunal, stating that the prosecutor can only investigate one side of the conflict and cannot investigate the RPF. that's called calling the bluff.
Yes. Yeah, put your cards on the table. You don't get to use a joker anymore.
Right, and this court only investigates and prosecutes one side.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we shouldn't call it a court anymore.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. And by the way, now, and just in addition, we want to remember that Del Ponte Point, that when it came time to make any decisions, the Americans were there. And I do recall the case of Mr. Baraguiza, who the court ordered freed with prejudice. They used the word with prejudice. Like today, open the prison door and let him out because of prosecution misconduct. Mm-hmm. And Kagame called and the Americans called. Only two parties called and said, don't do that. And so I think at least for that occasion, we had the two culprits in the same room. And they did get their way. Mr. Baraguiza died in prison.
That's true, and the Baraguiza decision was another instance of Rwanda immediately suspending all cooperation with the ICTR. They withdrew Prosecutor Del Ponte's visa at once.
Mm-hmm.
Their representative at the UN apparently cornered then president of the ICTR. Who was Navana Simpile at the time,
mm-hmm.
telling her not to apply this decision,
mm-hmm.
And she had said, and because now what we have with Arbour's statements is an acknowledgement that the prosecutor of the ICTR was never independent.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be independent. That's part of their mandate.
Yes.
But what we had from Pile after Baraguiza was an acknowledgement that the court wasn't independent of Kigali. Because she said, without the cooperation of Kigali, we can't hold a trial. Well,
that means no trials. If it's a justice system, right? You just don't have it.
If you can't be independent of a party that is supposed to be under investigation, nothing in the jurisdiction of the ICTR says to investigate only the previous government side. There's no such provision.
Well, Tiefen Dixon, isn't this then the argument that every should be Exhibit A for all those African countries who are tired of being threatened by the International Criminal Court or the International Caucasian Court, as the President of Guinea calls it? shouldn't this be Exhibit A? I mean, what are you guys doing? What kind of – and you Americans and Air Force colonels and former prosecutors from the U.S., and you're standing here in Africa? This is the kind of justice you give us.
No, that's absolutely right. This certainly is Exhibit A. Although most of them don't even most of those states on the African continent don't even need an additional exhibit. How the ICC has run its prosecutions is eloquent enough to warrant their decision to go. And they have a better. They already have a body. That they're setting up with a beautiful statute that makes aggression illegal, which the ICC has not managed to do yet, and the ICC mm-hmm. has an opt-out provision of aggression. That's the supreme international crime, and I'm only quoting Nuremberg decision.
Yes.
And there's now the ICC has an opt-out provision. Well,
yeah.
the body that the African Union is establishing has no such opt-out provision, and it has an idea of international crimes that's a lot more interesting than just those genocide crimes against humanity and violation of the Geneva Conventions. They've got some prohibition on human trafficking, drug trafficking, mercenaries on the African continent. So just let that
yeah.
in. What that would mean. For the African continent, and also
and maybe they could charge the occasional Frenchman or the occasional American if they were running around in camo in their countries.
Precisely, and actually, the definition that they've arrived upon would do just that. And well, speaking of prosecuting a Frenchman, that's what Rwanda has promised to do this morning.
Oh, over because they got tangled up in this thing that there's a French investigation of the plane, which, by the way, I mean, we have to agree that this that's a politicized process in that they've had this evidence for 22 years themselves, that France has never wanted to bother Kagame.
Nope. And this gambit, as sad to say, will probably yet again succeed.
Mm-hmm.
They've named 22 French officers this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see France, certainly not under François Hollande.
Well, their phone rings from the U.S. the same as it does in Kigali. They started off, they had everything they needed. But somebody, probably, I assume, a NATO power run from Washington, said, no, you're going to cause a problem for our friend Kagame. Let me ask you something also very relevant, and you were concerned about this, I know, as counsel. She also says that, and one of her spokesperson, Douglas Marks, is identified as one of the people for the prosecution side, I think. He said the problem was witnesses kept disappearing, people who knew about these things. And they're still disappearing. People are dying. And the dangerous places were Nairobi, where several very important witnesses knew all about this plane being shot down. Remember General Lazindi, but subsequently Senda Shong, other people. Who's going to remedy the problem here? You did diligent work. You invited people to come and tell what they knew. And here's the prosecutor whining that they lost some people or could have because they knew things about Kagame. Well, how about the defense? And who's going to ever straighten this matter out? This is you have a basis to expect a remedy from the United Nations Security Council who created this monster.
Yes. So the point about witness protection is just so stunningly hypocritical. We had to bend over backwards to get minimal and often, frankly, insufficient protection for witnesses who are being incredibly brave. This is an institution that doesn't have subpoenas, so mm-hmm. they have to decide to go. And we would argue what was true is that these witnesses were under threat for testifying for a defendant, or in some cases saying something critical about the current leadership of Rwanda, and this is something which was greeted with tremendous hostility,
mm-hmm.
and often, and I think it was feigned, but feigned skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
How could witnesses be in danger in Nairobi? Maybe Rwanda we might buy it, but not Nairobi. And mm-hmm. so I had to file. I filed a photograph of Seth Sendashanga that had been in the front page of the Nairobi Daily, The Nation.
Him in his car, you mean, blown to pieces?
Crushed over in his car, and you see the contents of his brain spilled over. I mean, that got filed into evidence. You want to say that Nairobi's safe?
Mm-hmm.
Nairobi is not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then to read now that this is part of the excuse why they didn't investigate RPF crimes or the shooting down of the plane because they might put people in danger. They didn't seem to care that much when they were opposing our motions precisely to protect people in Nairobi or South Africa or other states around the world.
Yeah.
So that struck me as callous.
Yes, somewhat.
It's callous, and when you say that we should have some reparation. I mean, yes, there are many witnesses in many of these cases who were punished for having testified.
Yes.
who had their refugee claims challenged or even denied.
And some of them transferred back to Rwanda.
Yes.
Eventually. Tiffin Dixon, we have to go, but we are very grateful and we want to return to this subject because I think this whole thing is a new door on the matter has been opened. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Tiffin Dixon. So you've been listening to Taylor Report, and we thank Hanny and we thank Phil Conlon, and we'll see you next week.